This episode is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. I'm sure you guys have noticed how comfy this studio has gotten. I got blankets, I got pillows, I got robes. They make the most incredible, comfiest products with this cozy, chic fabric. And I'm so grateful they're a part of this season. I got candles going. They make such great gifts, too. I got something for my wife from them. They do a Disney collaboration. They also have Team USA going on. My wife loved the Disney stuff. What I love is they take these collaborations. They also use products and have products that you would want around your house. And they just make it so much comfier. You're going to want to make your life comfier too. And you could add the promo code PAPA15 for 15% off on your first purchase. Check out barefootdreams.com.
They say people who've done time in prison live longer. So I ate tuna fish and mackerel for 5 years.
Whoa.
Could you eat fish after you left prison? I would never eat it again after 5 years of that.
I think I've had tuna fish twice.
Yeah, I would be like... Yes, hello. Welcome back to the Pop-Up with Paul and Friends. Guys, thank you for subscribing, for being here, for listening. If you listen to this show, or if you're new, you know I have certain subjects I really am obsessed with. I love talking about certain decades of living, and especially in show business in this town and beyond. And I'm so excited this guy is here today. He popped up on my radar on the internet of all places, and I got into a hole of obsession with his Instagram page. He tells great stories about old spots all over Los Angeles, but not just spots, stories of living. And then I got further in digging into this guy. I was like, oh, he's the Accidental Gangster is his name, but he's got a great book. It's right here, The Accidental Gangster, From Insurance Salesman to Hollywood Fixer. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Ori Spado, everybody. Hey.
Thank you.
There's no one here, but I try to clap to get everyone excited, you know?
Yeah.
As I said, I could watch you all day and night, man. I feel like you've lived the life that we see in movies. You've lived that life.
You know, I'm amazed at myself of what I've done, where I've been, and how have I been able to navigate and meet the people I have met in my life and do everything that I have done. And I'm going to be 80 years old in December.
Wow.
And I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm meeting amazing people, more amazing people now than ever. I mean, it's crazy, and thank God I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I'm able to do this and try to maintain my health and try to give back, give people something they love, try to make people happy, and that's what I'm about nowadays, you know, from the old days to where I am now, but...
Is it wild for you to kind of walk around like you do on your page? You go to different houses, people you knew. Is it wild looking back now, seeing changes, seeing how the world is around you versus kind of the heyday of when you were here with everyone? For example, like I saw you at Dean Martin's house. Dean Martin's my favorite guy. You're talking about Dino. Is it crazy to see these things today for you looking back?
Well, look, you know, as a child, I recall watching the Ed television show, okay, when we got our first TV, and seeing Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Don Rickles, seeing all these people, Elvis Presley, the Beatles, to think that someday that I would be meeting these people and know them, coming from Rome, New York, to Hollywood. And, you know, it's really a funny thing. How I really got my start as a Hollywood fixer was with Dino De Laurentiis and Ralph Serpy. And Ralph Serpy and I became very close friends. He knew people back in New York, and Ralph always had great homes. And he was out here. Ralph did the movie. He and Dino were like this. They produced a lot of movies together. And... The Velocity Papers in 71, that's when I began. Okay, I had to go on the movie set, take care of a problem. And then the word got around how I did it. I started getting calls. But here I am at this age, and on my social media, and I'm the dumbest guy you ever want to meet when it comes to technology, but I got a friend that we connected on LinkedIn.
Uh-huh.
And she's a really great actress, young girl, and she's the granddaughter of Rolf Serpy.
Oh, wow.
And her name, and she's a singer. Her brother's a singer. And her father is Greg Evigan.
Okay.
Now, Greg Evigan, if you remember many years ago, he's from your neck of the woods, New Jersey.
That's right.
All right.
Jersey guy.
What, the bear,
201?
It was a bear. Movie with a bear.
Oh, I don't know.
Greg Evigan.
Okay.
BJ and the Bear.
Oh, yeah. BJ and the Bear. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And then he went on and did other TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fun knowing your work now through social media. I mean, it's a great vehicle to get your stories out to this generation. Like, seeing your page, we also know you walk the walk. Like, you're not walking around, like, reminiscing about these guys. You were a Hollywood fixer for many years. You were in touch. You were friends with everybody. That's what is so cool to me. You were friendly with these people. I am curious, though, because we hear stories about people like you in Hollywood, especially Italians, especially, you know, the fixing that you do. Like, what went into when that first gig, when you're like, I got to fix a problem on set, what happened? Can you share how that happened?
Well, you know something? It's no different than handling a sit-down, okay? But, you know, my negotiation skills and everything comes from when I was an insurance salesman. And I was one of the top insurance salesmen around.
Mm-hmm.
I did a member of the $1 million round table. And so it came from that, okay? I did it all without a gun, all with what's in my head, and my ability to verbalize. And yes, my looks have something to do with it, because I walk into a room, I know the first people. First thought in people's head when they look at me, there's a mafia guy.
Mm.
So I learned to utilize that there to my benefit.
Mm.
So even though I'm talking to people alone, they knew that I had 500 guys behind me.
Yeah. And also, even if you didn't, you knew to use, you knew how to use your personality to negotiate.
And you know, when you got to make everybody happy in a situation. And it always, thank God, it works out, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't understand. Sometimes people get a little hot-headed, okay, for the wrong reasons.
Mm.
And I would let them understand the right reasons.
Yeah. It's almost like it's funny you say hot-headed, too, because it's almost like I'm sure you've seen people get killed or just lose their money, or just hot-headed never gets you anywhere. It's almost like you were the even guy who was smart enough to kind of socially see where you could maneuver to get what you needed to get done for whoever, right? But you can't teach that.
That guy over there, I mean, I watched him lose $500,000 one time.
Sinatra?
Yeah.
Jeez, what happened?
Well, he couldn't tell his wife about it. So he lost it to the bookies.
Wow.
And so he had to take a little longer. Mm. And, but he got the money, I guess, from whom?
Mm. What was it like with those
Take
guys?
Take a guess.
Yeah.
D. Martin.
Wow.
D. Martin was smart with money.
Really?
Oh, yeah. D. had a lot of money.
Wow.
He owned a lot of stock in Motorola. You know, instead of taking pay, he took stock.
Mm. Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, you can teach this stuff, but I know from my own life is there's a certain thing you're born with we're talking about. Smarts, you know, with business, with money, with negotiating. I like hearing about these guys, too. Obviously, I romanticize these guys, Dean, Frank. I love the era of them. What was it like being in the inner world with them where you were actually helping them? Like, you're not just a friend. You're actually being of service to these guys, right?
Well, you know, the first thing is I never – They're stars, but, you know, like, you know, I don't treat anybody any differently, you know, like I treat you, and I'll treat the janitor the same way I'm going to treat Frank, okay, or anybody else. I had that ability to be able to talk to everybody and try to find the good in everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, Frank was an awesome guy. He was a very giving guy. Very giving. Tip big.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing that I want to say, and I like to make it clear, I do this in a lot of my interviews. I said it before, because people are always asking me that Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin were in a mafia.
Mm.
No, they were not.
Mm.
What people need to understand is back in the day, when these guys wanted to perform, the clubs they were performing in were owned by mafia guys.
Right.
You know, and I just did this here at Dean's house, and maybe you heard it. Dean and I had more in common than we really thought about. Okay? We had Lou Perry in common. Who is Lou Perry? Well, if you read my book, you're going to find out that Lou Perry is the guy that introduced me to Sonny Franchese when Michael Franchese had a problem with my friend Walter Fison.
Okay.
But it was Lou Perry, who was Dean Martin's first agent, and he discovered Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis.
Wow.
And he put them in Skinny D'Amato's 500 Club in Atlantic City.
Wow.
And boom, they blew up.
Wow.
So it's the same guy. He became a casting director. He had offices on 57th Street.
Mm. Yeah, it's a smaller world when you get involved, right? It's a smaller than you'd think.
It's, you know, it's much smaller world than you'd think.
Yeah.
I mean, tomorrow I got a friend from London coming in. His name is Clive Black.
Okay.
Great guy. One of the best guys you want to meet. Know who his father is? His father wrote the song, Born Free.
Wow.
All right. And he's big in the music business.
Yeah. It's a small circle. But I also think, and again, I love talking about the era we're talking about, because that was the circle to be a part of. I mean, in show business, in Hollywood, you were part of the circle of the coolest people from the outside, the most fun, the most exclusive. Was Hollywood different about that at the time? You know, now if you're in these circles, you want to get your photograph taken. It's a different world of like, let's be public, let's take photos. But there was some secrecy and some kind of coolness about the circle you were a part of back then.
Well, you know, first of all, number one, I never asked anybody for an autograph.
You were a peer. Okay. You were a peer. That's
okay.
Why.
Okay. Yeah. Look, we're the same here, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, this is my job. You got your job. Yeah. You know, we all got a job to do. Let's do it. But, you know, it's funny. On the way here, I saw something. And I see things. I saw something with Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking in my head, oh, my God. I'll never forget. And it was right after 911. Wyclef John, instead of flying, he wouldn't take a plane. Mm. So he was being produced by Carlo in Oakland. And Wyclef's birthday is October 10th, the same day as my daughter.
Mm.
So I flew up there, and I was in the studio, and I could remember I go outside to have a cigarette, and Carlo's standing next to me, and he's smoking a joint, and, you know, and we're bullshitting.
Yeah.
You know, things like that there, and I go, my God, I really, how I do things, just on the spur of the moment, I do this, and I end up with some entertainer or movie star sure. next to me.
Sure.
And a lot of them they're interested in me and my story.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but, you know.
I think it goes with the willingness, and also I'm similar too, because I get to interact with a lot of celebrities as well. And it's when everyone's a person. So if you start treating somebody like they're not a person, they actually feel uncomfortable. Why aren't you treating me the same way as everybody else?
Right.
You know, and then it's weird. So I can relate to that. But I also like the idea about your story, and I've read some of the book, is that you've always been willing, it seems, to kind of, you say yes and show up for people in your circle and also in business. And that goes a long way, which I don't know if it's a dying breed, but it's different now. Like, you're a man of your word. You go get something done when it needs to be gotten
well,
done.
Well, listen, you know, I knew I was coming out here today. You always see me in a sport coat, okay? But years ago, I was dressed up.
Yeah.
French cuffs, okay, and everything. Okay? If you notice, I was standing in front. I was here before you.
Yeah.
I'm always 15 minutes early for an appointment.
Right.
All right. I knew I would have a problem. All right. There'd be traffic. There'd be construction. Mm. You got to, you know, those are just things, you know, you got to take the other person into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't do that today. People come, oh, I'm sorry, I'm late. I'm in traffic. Well, you know there's going to be traffic.
Yeah.
So you leave earlier.
Yeah. Do you think, because I think this, and I, because I like this old school stuff, is there a less, are people less classy today?
There's no class today.
Right?
There's no class. There's no respect.
Yeah.
And it's very disappointing. I blame the parents. When did we lose it? Just my thought. I was in the military. I served my country proudly. I take veterans very seriously. I've given over 100 books away at the West LA VA to both the workers, to the homeless people that live there, and the people in the hospital.
Awesome.
But it was the Vietnam War. I remember when I got out of the Army and the people who were protesting the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And then Richard Nixon ended the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I read that he did that was because, you know, the wealthy people were getting their children deferments to get out of the draft, not right. to go in there.
Yeah.
Okay? And I remember me and my cousin when these guys who were avoiding getting drafted were going to Canada. My cousin and I, we used to leave our wives and go to Canada. And I see these guys in the clubs and, you know, they were protesting the war. And, goddamn, you're an American citizen. You should be happy and proud
yeah.
that you're living in such a great country, that you got the freedom to be able to do things.
Right.
But at the same point, you better be prepared, if you're a young man, to go to war.
Yeah.
Defend this country.
Yeah.
All right? And you're going to see something on my social media coming out on Memorial Day. And I was really upset, but I went to the VA cemetery over there on Wilshire Boulevard in Sepulveda. And there's thousands and thousands of graves, all right, of our fallen soldiers that gave up their lives so we have freedom.
Yeah.
And people don't realize. Most of them are the ages of 18 to 21.
Yeah.
And no longer here.
Yeah. It's a generational comfortability, I think. We're so, like, the generation of people who served in that war, and even World War II, you're close to a perspective of war, and actually active war. You're in the war. I feel like since then, it's comfortable. It's a more comfortable lifestyle, which makes kids lose perspective, and parents too. At least that's my take on it. Like, we're very comfortable in America on high. And don't get me wrong, as people who are poor, as people who don't have similar lifestyles, but comfort, I think, is what makes people lose perspective.
Well, comfort, people get comfortable very easily.
Yeah.
And they forget the world that's around them and why we're here. And the purpose we're here, and they don't realize we're only here for a short period of time. We're here a blip in time.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And what do you do with that you opportunity? Know, yeah,
you know, approaching 80 years old, and I was telling somebody yesterday, that most of my friends are dead, and a lot of them are in prison. But the majority are dead. I'm still here, and for a purpose.
Sure.
And, you know, we should be grateful for every day that we have. And I try to make somebody's life happy every day.
That's nice.
And I ask others to do the same.
That's great. Do people ask you for advice now at your age about what's the key?
Oh, I mentored a lot of young men to stay out of a life of crime. Teach them to become an entrepreneur, how to find something that they love doing. Okay? You got to love what you're doing.
Sure.
You got to love life.
Yeah.
I love waking up every day doing something.
Yeah.
At my age.
Yeah.
Where are most people my age? They're retired.
Yeah.
People ask me, you retired? I go, no. Okay. I'll never retire.
But that's why you're still spry. I mean, if you don't use it, you lose it is a real thing. If you just sit on the couch every day or the beach and I love the approach of getting up every day because we can get comfortable and forget that or in pain, you know. You don't want to do anything. It will make you less physically active, I feel like, you know.
I try to walk at least a couple miles every day.
That's great.
And
I also love that you're mentoring kids to become entrepreneurs because I heard in your book you said, you know, don't do this life. You gave advice in the beginning of the book. You're like, one thing I'd say is don't do it. That surprised me because I see you and I go, this guy's living fast and fun and with the people and doing so. But your advice, you wouldn't want people to get involved in this type of life like you said.
In a life of crime?
I guess so. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're going to end up in jail for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't go to jail, you're going to end up dead.
Yeah. It's those two things.
Those are your choices.
Yeah.
But you can't beat the law today.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Look, you see in my book, I talk about Frank Costello. I was telling somebody a story today, actually. Remember Walter Winchell? All right. Well, a friend of mine, his wife was a singer many years ago, sang at the Copa. Walter Winchell gave her the worst review you could think of. Oh, she happened to be living with Frank Costello's brother, Eddie Costello.
Oh, boy.
A phone call. Frank Costello got wind of it. He made a phone call to Walter Winchell. Next day, Walter Winchell retracted it all.
Wow.
Those kind of things don't happen today.
Yeah.
But that's the class that Frank Costello, Meyer Lansky, okay, Lucky, all these old timers had. Russell Buffalino, who I knew. Carlo Marcello.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the class that these guys had.
Yeah.
And people don't realize. They look at us, we're gangsters. You know, in the 1900s, when we started coming over here, okay, you think that this thing at the border is something new? No, it's nothing new, folks.
Yeah.
It's been going on. When the Italians were coming over, they called us all killers and war.
Oh, I know.
All right.
Yeah.
Killers and gangsters. They nicknamed Wops and Guineas, they called it.
Yeah.
We had the Irish, the German, the Jew. Everybody.
Yeah.
So today, it's those coming across the southern border. It's nothing's changed.
Right, right.
Okay? It's just a political thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And it's going to be one of the things that's going to determine the outcome of the election.
Right. It's a talking point, though, more than it America's always been that way. It's more of a talking point now for voting than it is a new thing.
Right.
Just different people come. Different immigration always going to happen here. But to your point, I always kind of rail against – people kind of forget that Italians had it hard when we came over because I joke we gave them great food. We gave them great movies. We kind of made – we made America – we gave it some spice, you know?
All Italians are not gangsters. The majority of them are good people.
Yeah.
And like you said, the good food, all the good things they do, artwork, you name it, okay? Movies,
I know. But we forget, I think, the culturally people forget, like, that we get a pass now, Italians, where it's like, oh, you guys are Italian. You have it easy. It's like, we didn't have it easy when we came over here. We had it terrible. It was horrible for Italians for a long time in America.
Look at, what would America be if it were not for all the immigrants that came?
Amen to that. I know. I wouldn't be sitting here.
You wouldn't be sitting here. I wouldn't be here.
You're talking about the class of these guys, and I agree with you about the class, especially show business. I've read a lot of books. You know, I love Johnny Carson. I love Dean Martin. I've read all these books.
Oh, Johnny was great.
I love Johnny. Yeah.
Here's what you know, that's another thing I'm thinking. We had Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, Jack Parr. These guys did never discuss politics.
I know.
Today, all our talk show, they're all politicians.
Isn't it annoying to see that, like, it's become identity for so many people, but it's also a business. Like, you talk politics, it's what people want to talk about, so they're going to make videos and discussions about it. But entertainment does not have to be political all the time, right?
Right.
And it wasn't.
No.
But it feels like it is now, right? It's like it's almost...
terrible. You know, when I joined the Army, the first thing I learned, we were told, never discuss politics or religion. Not today. You turn on the TV. What do you got?
That's it.
Politics and religion.
Yeah. It's almost used to, it's a, I don't know if it's control, but it's you, it's a mechanism to use for voting, for manipulation, I think. It's
well,
so
yeah,
much.
Look, it all stems right from the top, okay? From our executive branch to the U.S. House of Representatives, down to your cable networks, right to the kitchen table.
Yeah. But don't you think, and you know from the life you lived and how we grew up as well, how I grew up on the East Coast with a mix of people, 9 times out of 10, if you turn the TV off and you have a conversation with somebody from any creed, any political, any religion, you can break bread and find common ground. It's like we're almost sold now. Do not. They're different. They're this. They voted for this. They believe that. It's crazy. It's very polarizing.
Yeah, we could agree to disagree.
Exactly.
Okay, you might like Biden, I like Trump, or vice versa. We could still be friends.
Yeah, but that's going out of style.
But that's out of style now.
It's like you can't. People think you can't.
People who love Trump hate the people who vote for Biden. And the people with Biden hate the people who vote for Trump. That shouldn't be happening.
It must be wild from your vantage point to see that, because even I grew up in a way where, like, it wasn't about who you voted for or even your religion. It was about the person you were. We have these, like, labels now that become, like, this is who you are. You did this one thing, I'm not going to be kind to you. It's wild.
You know, when I got out of the Army and I ended up going back to rural New York, the first thing my father did was take me to register to vote. And he told me to register as a Democrat. And I asked him, Dad, why as a Democrat? He said, because they'll let something fall out the truck so everybody eats. So I was a Democrat. When I moved to California, I changed to Republican. Uh-huh. But after thinking about everything in the way I am, because I really read the ballots, yeah. I really read the measures and everything, okay? And now I'm non-affiliate. Uh-huh. I'm not affiliated with any party. Uh-huh. Okay, so I'm one of those independent that they got to fight for my vote.
Right. Which is honestly seems to make more sense today because of how polarizing it is.
It's too polarized. Yeah. Why do we only have two parties? Who invented it? Or when they said the Republican, the Democrat, that was the beginning of division right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting thinking about the history of the country, though, how far it's kind of become crazier and more one side versus the other. Since the history of the country, I do think people are craving the connection with the opposite. Like, it's like we're sold this idea that we're different, but like I said, you break bread, and like I wish there was more of that today. It seems like it's harder and harder to break through to people. They're so like warped by what we're watching.
Well, look at here's these things right here. Okay. Going to a restaurant, see a young guy and a gal out on a date. They're sitting at the table looking at their phones. Okay. They're not talking to each other.
Yeah.
So the young kids are not communicating.
Yeah.
The only way they're communicating is texting or emailing.
I know. It's not real connection, though.
And that's not a connection.
To your point, man, I had this dream. I feel like you would love this. I always wanted to open a supper club with today, like the old days, where you could smoke inside and no phones, and we just do jazz, crooners, and comedy.
And oh, my God. I'd be your best customer. Maybe I could sit there, have a drink, and smoke. Because yep. I smoke.
Yeah, I know. And I, by the way, you're so healthy and you still smoke. That's a whole nother anomaly about you. Because they always say, you know, you got good Italian lungs, man.
You're smoking. I got something going on. You know what? People say, you know, I never thought I was going to live to 63.
Okay.
My father passed away at the age of 62.
Wow. Okay.
He was a diabetic and he had heart problems. Mm. I'm a diabetic. I got stents. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe, you know, they say people who've done time in prison live longer. So maybe it's my prison time because I ate healthier. Mm. All right. Because I couldn't eat the food they served. And thank God my children made sure my commissary was flush.
Really?
So I ate tuna fish and mackerel for 5 years.
Whoa. That's why, though. It's one ingredient, simple protein.
And I was walking 7 miles a day.
Wow. Could you eat fish after you left prison? I would never eat it again after 5 years of that.
I think I've had tuna fish twice.
Yeah, I would be like, I'd be done with fish after that much tuna.
No, I like fish.
But tuna, you can't do anymore.
No. Yeah. I made scallops the other day.
In my mind, I know this didn't happen for your time in prison, as you're describing, but when I think of the Goodfellas kitchen scene, you know, when they're making the sauce and he's cutting the garlic.
In Brooklyn, the Metropolitan Detention Center, you got all the Italians there, okay, off the different family. We had our table. I want to tell you something. At Christmas, Thanksgiving, these guys, they baked pies. We had the pasta. You think you're outside. It was good. I mean, you know, we had a lock on the kitchen. Everybody contributed something.
How it's depicted in Goodfellas is my favorite movie ever. It is something about Italian pride and men, even being held against their will in a prison, you're still going to find a nice community. You're going to sit together. You're going to figure out a way to eat good, like no matter what, right? That's something that's in our DNA, I feel like.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
I tell you, some of these guys, one guy made cheese. It was so freaking good. I don't know how he did it, but he'd get this ingredient, that, and he had some socks, and he did it in his cell. When he served it, holy shit, it was great.
But mozz? Like prison mozz?
Huh?
Like mozzarella? Prison mozzarella?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great.
That's amazing. I got when there's a will, there's a way, man. That's what I'm saying. It's a squeaky wheel Italian thing, I feel like, is innate in our culture about surviving. And it's our roots in Italy. I mean, it's peasant food, things. A lot of Italian ingredients come from, you know, not having money and just what was there.
And look at it as a child. Because we didn't have the money. Pasta vigiol. Today it's a delicacy.
It's crazy, right? I love when Dean Martin sings about that too. Pasta Fazuli says, right?
Yeah.
You said earlier, you're talking about the class of some guys. You mentioned some big names that we know, Meyer Lansky and stuff. So you made me think of a question to ask you. Who is the scariest person you've ever met? And you seem like a guy who's not scared easy.
I was honest to God. I can't think of any guy that I've been afraid of or have had fear.
Sounds like they were afraid of you, if that was the case.
Maybe. That could be. I don't know. Fear is something that I don't have. You know, I'm going to be 80 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing when I'm 80 years old?
What?
I'm going skydiving.
Get out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you still don't have fear. You don't fear of anything.
No.
Wow. That's great you're doing that. That's awesome. I've done it once. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's the coolest feeling, though.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to love it.
Yeah. My kids are all coming out here.
That's a blast. You got to film it. You're going to film it?
Yeah. I'd love to get a news crew out there, man. That'd be awesome.
Wait, when are you doing it? I would come film you.
December 17th.
Here? In California?
Here, yeah.
Hey, I'll take you up on that, man. I may try and get out there with a camera crew. That'd be incredible. I'm serious. I've actually filmed skydiving before with somebody.
Yeah.
I jumped with a girl with Down syndrome, 21-year-old girl, second girl in history to do it with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
In New York, upstate New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Where in upstate?
Like an hour, like soon, like the New Paltz area. Like
my son goes skydiving. He goes to the the Keys in Florida.
That's beautiful. That's awesome you're doing that. So you're, it almost seems like, based on your upbringing and also hearing stories in your book about you as a kid, you weren't a fearful guy. You were a guy, you kind of took what you could, and it's a personality thing too. The fact that you have been around these figures, because, you know, if you had fear, maybe you wouldn't have done as good in business with so many figures you've done good business with, you know?
I think if I had fear, I probably wouldn't be alive.
Right.
Okay. You know, I never became a made man, but that was my doing.
Yeah.
I was asked twice.
Mm.
Sonny wanted to propose me in New York. Jimmy Cacci, we came this close in California. Or me taking that button.
Wow.
All right. And I could remember. And we were all at my house. Guys coming from Vegas and so forth. I mean, how I got out of that was just an amazing spectacle in itself. But, you know, my family comes first. My family is my children.
Yeah.
Okay? That comes first.
Yeah.
But once you take that oath, your family is not.
Right.
Your family is now all these guys.
Yeah.
And it's a thing. But one thing that I did do, I knew what the rules were, the policies, and there's policies, political bullshit.
Yeah.
Like any other organization. I knew what they were. I abided by them. And I was very respectful. I knew when to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
And listen.
Yeah, but to me, if you turn down getting made, isn't it kind of an insult, or can be taken as an insult if you turning down an opportunity in their eyes to join this thing of ours? And no, or you just had the respect?
No, I'm sure I'm not the only one.
You knew what was best for your family, yeah. which is very honorable on your side.
I belong to myself.
Yeah, that's a respectable way to look at it. Because some guys, I can imagine, and I know from stuff I've watched, honestly, I'm not, but some people chomping at the bit for that opportunity. It's opposite personalities.
Some kids are born, and they want to be it.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people don't get it, and they get pissed off.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's Christopher Moltisanti in Sopranos.
Yeah.
That's the whole storyline for him for a while.
Like winning for election. You didn't win the election.
Yeah, yeah. The biggest club you're a part of is yours and your family. And that's also, I think, why you've done so well in this world, though, with your business and your successes, is because you've honored that. That not everybody could do that. It's a skill set you learn in life.
Well, look, you know, I'm a divorced, a couple times I'm divorced. But, you know, I would never have children with anybody else except my first wife. We had three children.
Mm-hmm.
Got six grandchildren.
Wow.
My first wife, we still get along. Mm-hmm. We talk. She might not like me too much. She said, don't mention me in a book. the respect is there. And not the grandchildren are all getting older. But, you know, we would get together, my son's in Florida, the whole family. All the children, grandchildren, me and my ex-wife.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Same table.
Beautiful.
So I can see a lot of divorced fathers that don't know their kids.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, thank God I did marry the first. They say in Italian, the first one's the right one. So she didn't fuck it up. I did.
Yeah. Yeah, but you prioritize your children, which is awesome, because it is you hear stories all the time, and you knew that was priority, and that's the fruits of that is happening now with your grandchildren and the way you live your life now with everybody. And I'm a dad of two young girls. That's priority number one for me too, and I can't imagine not being close to them. It would be devastating to me, you know. But you get busy, it's life. You got to keep that priority.
Yeah, you know. I don't know, maybe I was too old-fashioned. I thought it was okay for an Italian to have other girlfriends. Like that's wrong, and I don't advise that.
I know. I know that too, but it is, I'm not co-signing that behavior, but it, I understand generationally, you know, like you kind of raised, you're raised with that, right? I mean, yeah. you kind of grew up with that. I'm not saying it's good behavior. I'm just saying, like, you see this in movies, you see the gumad. This is part of Italian culture, or it was back then, more than it is today. I don't have one. Trust me, I'm faithful to my wife, but I'm saying back then it was very common, right?
It was very
common. We're not saying
but
go
don't
do
think
it.
It's just the Italian thing.
Come Maybe on. It was everybody.
Let's not just blame the Italian.
All right. We'll blame all men. It's all men. You know that you're right. It's just yes. But hey, things happen and here we are today. I asked you who is the scariest guy, because I do comedy as well. I want to know who the funniest guy you've ever met in this world.
Oh, well, Jerry Zimmerman.
Oh, okay. I don't know Jerry Zimmerman.
He's in my book.
Okay.
Jerry Zimmerman. He was out here in the valley in Chatsworth. Jerry was hilarious. He was a con man, but I mean, he was so freaking funny. I can't even imitate things. Jerry was maybe like 6'5", 6'6", full head of gray hair, full head of hair, big guy. But he, I mean, you'd be in his office talking with him, right? And he'd get a phone call, he'd be talking to a guy, and then he'd take the phone, and he'd put the phone in his drawer. And he'd be talking with you. He said, that guy don't know he's in the drawer. You know? And then one time, he had these guys. Whenever Jerry would call me and say, come on out, there's money. He would never waste my time. And one time he said, okay, we're having a meeting. I got these two guys coming in. They were coming in from Minnesota. And I go on. Jerry always had an outfit. It was just a prop. He didn't had no need to have it. It was just for him to go. So we had some place and, you know, had a warehouse full of old furniture. But so I go to his office that day. He's got these two guys. And he's got his office dark. The guys are sitting in chairs in front of his desk. And he put a chair on the side of the desk for me to sit down. So he and I are on the same side, right? I sit down. And these two guys get up. They come, kneel down. They kiss my hand. Fucking Jerry. Jerry set this up with these guys, okay? Because these guys needed money. They were looking for like $12 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? And Jerry says he can get the money through me to the mob. Of course, they had to come up with money. And we normally end up getting $150,000, $200,000 from the people. Okay, wow. Jerry was the best comment, but he was funny.
Yeah.
He made you laugh about robbing your money.
He'd be stealing from you, but make you laugh on the way out. Would,
but that there, I mean, these guys, I'm sitting there. I never expected it, but, you know, you just go along with Jerry. This fucking guy is nuts. All right? But, oh, my God.
That's funny, man.
And, oh, great. I got a million stories with Jerry Zimmerman.
It's amazing. I'm impressed with the amount of story, the wealth of knowledge and stories you have. You got a great memory, which I keep
saying. Thank the Lord for my memory.
It must be whatever you've done health-wise has helped you with your memory. You drink and smoke, you said, too, right?
I usually drink. I don't drink very seldom now.
Okay.
Once in a while, I have a tequila.
Nice.
But smoke, I take 2 or 3 puffs from a cigarette. Just, I put it out.
I'm
a homeless man's dream. Yeah, when I throw my cigarettes away, they're gathering on the streets.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
Like crazy.
Oh, man.
Because they almost got a full cigarette. People said, why do you smoke?
Just a little bit, right? Just a taste. I mean, that's a good way. I guess it's moderation because we always find as we get older, people are always looking for tricks. It's like, what is the thing? I interviewed a guy once who was, I think, over 110. He was the oldest barber in America, actually in upstate New York. And the guy ate spaghetti every day because everyone always wants to know. They're like, what is the, how do you, and guess what? You'll appreciate this. He went to work. He was a barber. He was still working.
Really?
On his feet. So that's.
Is he fat?
No.
Eat spaghetti every day?
Spaghetti every day. Lean guy. Drove to work. I don't know. I don't think he should have still been driving. But the point is.
See, that's one thing I can't do because I'm diabetic. It's one of the things I, the carbs in it.
Yeah, it's different for everybody.
But I know when I love it, I'll have a dish, you know. I'll make a pound. People where I live, they love me. I eat a little dish, and I give it to my neighbors.
That's nice. I make pizza here now because I don't like the pizza in L.A., but you told me there's a good pizza spot. But you could do low carb now. That's a whole different world of carb. Yeah. You can go low for diabetics, and there's a lot more products now than there once was for you guys, at least, which is good, right? Speaking of restaurants, I've looked up some history here. I love old places. My favorite places to go in my life are old school. I go to Musso and Frank's at least like every other month here in L.A. It's my favorite steakhouse in L.A. I get the martinis there. I have great nights. In New York, I go to all the spots. I lived in New York 10 years. So many Keens, all these great old haunts, right? I smoke cigars. What, to you, was the best spot to hang with these guys, this era here that you always went to? Was it, I don't know. I don't even know enough about Hollywood to even take a guess.
You're going to not even know the place. It's so long ago. It was on Rodeo Drive. It was called the Tiki.
I've heard of this.
You heard of it?
I've heard of the Tiki, yes.
How'd you hear of it?
From stories, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It was a great place. It was a great place. Everybody was there. Frank be there, the Rat Pack would be there, all the guys. Okay, and we're all there picking up girls.
Wow.
Drinking, smoking. You know, all this bullshit that you can't smoke in a restaurant now and, you know. Took so much. You know, I have a lot of meetings of my own now. People want to meet me. Hey, I'll buy you lunch. I'll buy you that. Nah, come into my home.
Yeah.
You know why? I can sit there and smoke.
Yeah, you can live your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever play wingman to Frank or Dean or anybody? You ever play wingman to Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin at Tiki or anything? They didn't need it.
No.
You guys had enough charisma to help yourselves, I think, right? I want to show you something real quick. Dean Martin had a restaurant on Sunset for a while, Dino's.
Yeah.
You remember that? My keys for this studio is the old Dino's logo. Look at this.
Let me see that.
Isn't that cool? These are my keys every day. Every day. That's how much I love that guy.
Yeah.
Dino's.
Dino's.
So I like the old, you remember that? I remember you had that for a while.
What if it come after Dino's?
I don't know.
Some other actor took it, I think.
Probably, but this is his old. This was like a recreation, I think. But this is the old Dean Martin restaurant keys. I just love him and how he was and his style of performing and entertaining. And so I've kind of there's little knickknacks of Dean all over my stuff now. I got a couple things. He hangs in my car too. I got a picture of him.
Yeah,
he was just the coolest guy.
I tell you, one of the coolest things. Him and Dean Martin were really good to each other, but you know. I remember that when they didn't talk for so many years, and then Frank brought them together on Jerry's telethon.
That's right.
Memorial Day it was,
right?
That's
right, yeah.
How he did that, I'll never forget. That was a class act.
Yeah. And Jerry was a surprise, right? He came out.
It was a surprise.
Yeah.
They cried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so contentious for so long for them and kind of silly, like the grudge that they had, right?
Now, Jerry, I never knew Jerry Lewis. I met him one time. It was really funny. It was called the Marquis Hotel over in Westwood. Mm. It's the W now.
Okay.
But I had some guests from out of town, and we were in front, and this is before cell phones, and they had a camera, and they wanted to take a picture. And Jerry Lewis was there. He said, give me the camera. I'll take a picture of all of you.
Mm,
yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, he was nice about that there.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
People, I feel like, generally were nice. Did you ever see any of these guys? I know you work with a bunch, but did you ever get to go enjoy what they do? Did you ever go to shows or anything like that?
I seen Frank a lot in Las Vegas.
Wow.
One time, I'll tell you, it was crazy. I used to go to Las Vegas like every weekend, and I was always comp, never had to pay. And I was at the Maxim, and Frank was singing at the Golden Nugget. And I'm out at the pool. Some guy said to me, "Yeah, I went and seen Frank last night." I said, "You got tickets?" "Yeah." "No shit." And I said, "That's good. Normally sold out, right?" So I called. I said, I want to go see Frank. No problem. I go. You know who I sat with? I sat with his wife and Dionne Warwick at a table to watch Frank perform.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Those are the best seats in the house.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible, but, man. You know,
and I remember I was calling my friends, and it was somehow Memorial or Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
I was calling my friends in law, said, come on in. I'll get you in to see Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to come. I could do it myself.
Gosh, I wish we were friends.
And then I said, I'm glad my friend didn't come.
Got the best seat in the house, man. Yeah. Man, I wish I was around for that. I wish I could have seen those guys. I love Don Rickles, too. Someone Don who does comedy.
I used to be a member of the Friars Club. Yeah, Don was hysterical. I still watch some of his old stuff.
Me, too.
You make it. Crack up.
Yeah, I watched the inauguration at Ronald Reagan's inauguration where he did in D.C. I watched that like every few months. Do you remember when he did that? He opened up the inauguration and absolutely roasted President Reagan like completely. And he's like, is he laughing? I mean, all that stuff. As a comedian too, and I talk about this era with you because I don't want it to be lost in the new generation. And there's so much respect and class that I love. Honestly, I'm insecure because I almost always wear a blazer. And for some reason today, I was with my kids running around. I'm not in a blazer. And I'm like, I'm not showing this guy how old school I am. But I respect all this stuff we're talking about, and especially stuff in the book, because I don't want to see it lost, man. I don't want to see it lost for my kids' generation.
Well, you know, we live in a different era, a different time. The music is different. Everything's different. You know, I grew up at a time that we didn't have to lock our front doors.
Yeah.
I knew my neighbors. I knew everybody on the block. Everybody watched for each other. That's no longer happening.
Mm. You have to really work hard to cultivate that type of community now. You have to work for it. It's not the standard. You should just be the standard.
You know, you're a young man with a young family, and if you teach your daughters the respect, the honor, the loyalty, give them all the loving they need, then your daughters are going to be able to give that, okay, and keep it going.
Right. Yeah.
But families stop that.
Mm.
You know, I remember when women really weren't working, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And most, you were lucky to have a car. And then the next thing you know, our woman started working, and now you got two cars at every house.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got the husband and wife working, and now they got children, and as soon as their children are old enough, now you drive by driveway, you see four or five cars in their driveway.
Yeah, yeah.
We never had that luxury.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a culture of more. I mean, it's good that I think people can work, but the culture is more, and it could be at a detriment to the family time, to your point. Like, family time has become less and less important for families, maybe.
Right.
Maybe. Not for me, but even sometimes I skip dinners. Sometimes I forget to do dinner with the whole family. It's busy.
Look, if I did not have dinner with the family, I was reprimanded.
Yeah.
Or I might get a spanking.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the most important meal for the family.
Yeah.
Get together for dinner.
Yeah.
And today they don't do that.
Yeah. I was luckily raised the same way, family dinners. I make my daughter make pizza dough with me now. We make sauce. I try and teach her those things. But you're reminding me, you know, in this busy lifestyle and show business.
Well, you make pizza dough. Do you make pizza fritte?
The fried one?
Yeah.
I haven't ever tried it, but I know it. My Nona.
I've been making that. I buy my dough at Whole Foods.
I make dough. I'll make you a batch of dough sometime if you ever want some of my dough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I make it from scratch.
Yeah.
How do you fry it, though?
Just, you got to stretch it, all right?
Yeah.
And then have your frying pan with olive oil.
Okay. Super hot, right? Yeah.
All right, have it hot. It takes just a couple minutes. Oh. And then you put sugar on it.
I'm going to try that.
Oh, my. You'll never go back to pizza.
Really?
It's better.
My Nona used to make that for us in Jersey. I remember. But she did it with the red sauce and no cheese. She did
red
like a
sauce?
She did like a version of it without cheese. It was the same thing though. It was fried pizza, but it was like a she did a not a sweet one also. I remember.
No, I was wondering if you could put though my mother didn't put sauce.
She did both. She did the sugar one, but she also did a version. I remember specifically no cheese, and it was the best tasting. I mean, it's like the fried dough. And she made the dough, you know,
it's
the best.
She put a pasta sauce on there?
She did a pasta sauce on there. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, yeah. From scratch, tomato sauce.
I have to try that.
Yeah, it's just like a pizza without the cheese. It's like a fried.
I want to try your dough.
I will make you some dough. That's one thing you'll get, because you did tell me, you know, with your appearance fees usually. So I could pay you in dough. It's what I could offer you.
All right, I'll take it.
Listen, man, it's a dream to chat with you. I want to make sure everybody checks out your book, The Accidental Gangster. And before you go, tell me what's going on, because I know this is being made into it says on the cover, now being made into a major Hollywood movie. I can't wait to see your life as a movie, knowing what's in this book and knowing you now. How's that going?
It's George Gale, writer and director, who did Midnight Run, Bad Boys, Middleman, a whole slew of other movies. Call Me Sunday. He's been working on it for a few years. People think you write a script in a day. No. Takes time. With these good writers. Like, you see, Nick Pileggi wrote a blurb. Nick's a very dear friend. He wrote Casino, Goodfellas. He's got a new movie coming out called Alto Nights with De Niro. Took him 5 years to write it.
Wow.
George called me Sunday. He says, Ori, within 2 weeks, I'll be sending the script. I'll be finished. I'm sending it to you, Anthony, and Sean. Anthony's my son. He's a producer on it. And Sean Robbins, another producer. Mm-hmm. He did Mortal Kombat and a lot of other movies. He says, Ori, I never say this. He said, but this is the best script I ever written.
Wow.
He said, it's better than Midnight Run.
Whoa.
I said, holy shit. So it's almost 1 week. We got another
week
to go.
That's great.
Oh, my God.
Now, wait. Who's your dream actor to play you? Do you ever think about that?
You know, people always ask me that question. And when we began, they said, Ori, who do you want to play you? I said, Denzel Washington. They said, what? I said, yeah, Denzel Washington.
He'd be amazing, yeah. He could do it.
I said, they said, why Denzel? I said, because Denzel could say more without ever opening his mouth.
Yeah.
He's great at that.
Yeah.
You know?
So much in the eyes and the expression.
You know, and that's so important in what I did.
Yeah.
Of not saying nothing, but you are.
That's the best actors, in my opinion, do that. I mean, like James Gandolfini. I'm rewatching The Sopranos for like the 10th time, but his eyes in that show, he says so much without saying anything.
Yeah.
And it sounds like in the life you've lived, you've said a lot of nothing by saying a lot of something.
Right.
So that Denzel's a good one. I like that. That's a good answer. Maybe it could be Denzel. Who knows? You never know, man.
It would be different. Who knows?
Well, listen, it's an honor to have you in here, because I get to chat with the real guy before the movie's out. I get to say now you were on our show before the movie came out. How cool is that? I want to implore everybody to go check out The Accidental Gangster too. I have the hard copy. Thank you so much for this. I picked it up on Audible, and it's actually really fun. I want to tell people it's really fun to listen to as well. You got a great guy narrating it. It's not you. It's another
guy. It's not me, but he sounds a lot like
me. He sounds
like
you, and he's got a good kind of like draw where like you're in. I started listening to it a week ago. I'm flying through it. It's really entertaining, truly. So check it out on Audible. Check it out here. And I want to read actually what Nick said.
Go to my website to get an autograph copy.
That's awesome too. Ori provides the details of this time in the life and his long battle with the FBI, whose overwhelming resources made it a fight that was impossible to win. No. Yeah, there's a lot. That's what Nick Pileggi said. I love that you're friends with Nick, who wrote two of my favorite movies of all time, Casino and Goodfellas. That's incredible. What a good seal of approval on the book, getting him to sign off on that. That's nice, right?
Well, John Connolly wrote bestseller with James Patterson.
Jack Gilardi here, agent at ICM. You got all the people, man. I just flipped through here and saw Regis Philbin pop up. I mean, everybody's in here. Are you glad you came to the Valley to hang out for a little bit?
Yeah.
You have fun? Thank you, Ori. Guys, thank you for watching the pop-up show. We'll see you next week. Give it up one more time for Ori Spado, everybody. And still no claps. Sorry, Ori. Spado. Ciao. This episode was brought to you by Barefoot Dreams, the coziest and comfiest products I've ever felt. I got blankets, pillows. I got robes now. My wife got a robe. They got me candles. I mean, they do everything you could ever need. Clothing, decor, things for the house. It's never ending with the products they provide. And it also is the comfiest products I've ever felt. And if you don't know them, you will really be shocked by how comfortable everything feels. It's called cozy chic material. What you're going to want to do is make your life incredibly cozier. Check out barefootdreams.com and enter the promo code POPUP15 for 15% off your first purchase.